Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
What is viral hate? Who's behind it? What role does the social media play in spreading viral hate? We're going to discuss this and much more. My guest is Christopher Wolfe. He's an internet lawyer with Hogan Lovells, and he is co-author of the book Viral Hate, subtitled Containing Its Spread on the Internet. And the other co-author is Abraham Foxman. Chris, I have to tell you, this is a very readable book. I mean, it's appalling and scary in many ways, but I found it to be so useful and a frame of reference in teaching me something. I thought I knew a lot. I don't know much at all.
Well,
and I really want to congratulate you on doing something that is so approachable for people.
Thank you for that compliment coming from you. That's high praise, and we appreciate that. We really wanted to make this book accessible. It's not a legal textbook.
No, it isn't.
And it's not a technology guide. It's really intended for general audiences to bring to their awareness the problem of online hate, because it is an epidemic and it has serious potential repercussions for kids and adults alike, as well as society in general.
Well, I like its common sense. I like the approach that you use. But let me just ask you this. Have you thought about trying to get it into schools?
Well, we would love that. And of course, it's for sale online at Amazon.com. And we would love school systems to buy it. We think parents should buy it.
I think they should, too, because I think it points up the responsibility of everyone in society to contain viral hate.
Well, you know, the genesis of this book is the work that Abe Foxman, who's the national director of the Anti-Defamation League, which is one of the oldest civil rights agencies in the country, and I have been doing along with the professional staff at the ADL really since the early 90s, since the beginning of the Internet, in fighting online hate. Because as great a tool of communication, entertainment, and education as the Internet is, it also has become a tool for hate mongers and a vehicle for hate from people who you wouldn't normally expect it from. But somehow that distance and separation that the Internet allows brings out the worst in some people. And the effects are not just the pollution of words on the Internet, but it really does affect people and has led to murders.
Well, you've talked about some of the people. It's led to suicides. It led to murders. It's led to gang violence. It's led to all kinds of things. And that's part, I guess that's the scary part of it for me, how words spread through the Internet can make people do such crazy, violent things. But I guess in one sense, seeing it in print is okaying it, at least for the person who wants it to be.
So my co-author, Abe Foxman, is a Holocaust survivor. And as he points out, the Holocaust didn't begin with gas chambers. It began with words. It began with propaganda.
Yes, it did.
And despite the adage, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words may never hurt me, that's simply not true in the Internet era. Because we've seen time and time again, as you pointed out, that words of hate actually do incite violence or so degrade and denigrate people that they commit harm to themselves and commit suicide.
Well, let's skip ahead a little bit and talk about how the social media plays a part in this, because we're talking about people and doing things that maybe sometimes would surprise their friends, even if they found out what they were writing on the Internet. Do you think it's the sense of being anonymous that allows people to express these awful emotions and thoughts?
Well, anonymity certainly plays a role. It also plays a role in allowing free expression, so there's a balance that needs to be struck. But there's something about the separation that your PC or your handheld mobile device gives people. And look, we've all seen it in emails that we get from friends. People tend to be a little less temperate and a little less thoughtful in how they express themselves.
And don't they realize those emails are around forever?
Well, that's right.
they come back to haunt a lot of people.
You remember the movie Defending Your Life with Meryl Streep and Albert Brooks, where they were making a decision whether they got into heaven, and they went back and reviewed the videotape of their life, and Albert Brooks was shocked that there was a videotape of his life. Well, in fact, the Internet has become the videotape of our lives, and that's part of this problem, that kids especially don't realize that what they say and do on the Internet may come back to haunt them when they apply for admission to schools and when they apply for jobs. And part of their hate-filled content that they may think is a joke actually may deny them a job or an education.
Yeah, and that's a really serious thing, and that brings the whole issue back to, you know, some of the hate is teens against teens, others are people against groups, whether it's sexual orientation, gender, religion. There's all kinds of hate that's being spread, but you make it very clear that you don't think that this is an issue for the government to regulate.
It isn't, and it really can't be. As a First Amendment lawyer, I understand the First Amendment, but I also support it because free expression is enormously important. And frankly, the best antidote to hate speech is more speech, counter speech. And what we need to do is inspire people to respond. You know, when this book was first published, the first three reviews that appeared on Amazon were hate speech.
Really?
And they sat there for some time before other people posted, you know, honest, legitimate. We can take criticism, but the fact that people use that opportunity just to post, there was one of them that said the book is the work of Satan.
Oh, my goodness.
And the other two were white supremacist postings, and they kind of proved our point about how easy it is to spread hate. And I think your listeners need to understand the scale of the problem. You know, every single minute on the internet, there are 500 new websites. There are 300,000 tweets. There's something like 40,000 new postings on Facebook and 600 hours of video on YouTube.
That boggles the mind.
And that's all user-generated content. And that's really what has changed the game here. When the internet first was developed, it really was sophisticated internet developers, website operators who were able to publish. Now, anybody can be a publisher all the time and reach billions of people. The barriers to entry are virtually zero.
Yeah, that's what astonishes me, is how it can spread, how something can, as you say, go viral. That's, of course, why you call it viral hate. Viral means it's spreading rapidly.
Exactly. And the First Amendment, the government, to get back to your question, really cannot control this. Only actionable threats, essentially, are prohibited by law. Everything else is fair game. But that doesn't mean that the internet companies hosting content, the YouTubes, Facebooks, and Googles of the world, and many others, can't curate a more civil environment. And it's in their interest to do that, because people will eventually tune out if every time they go on to the services, all they see is hate-filled, repugnant content. So it's in their interest, but also I think they recognize they have a social responsibility to do what they can to help combat this epidemic of hate.
You talk about in the book about some of the things that they're currently doing, and also the responsibility of parents, the responsibility of schools. So there's a lot of areas that can make a difference in stemming the tide of viral hate.
Well, it's a shared responsibility, we think. And, you know, in the early days of the internet, parents thought that their kids were the experts. They were the so-called digital natives. And people of a certain generation, the parents' generation, considered themselves immigrants. And like many immigrants, struggled with the language and didn't quite understand it as well as their kids, who were the natives. And frankly, that's a cop-out, because what ended up happening was that parents let their kids go into very bad neighborhoods online that they would never let them do in the real world.
Mm-hmm. So and don't even think about it.
Exactly. So there needs to be more guidance from parents, but there also needs to be cyber literacy education. Abe Foxman, my co-author, and I think it's appalling that this country does not have better cyber literacy education. As much time as our kids spend online, the fact that they're not taught the basics of how to behave online, of what civil behavior is, how to filter content, how to understand what they're seeing, and as we discussed a moment ago, what they say and do can haunt them for the rest of their lives. The
right.
fact we don't teach that is really a national disgrace.
It is. We're going to take a break here just to let everyone know that they're listening to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Christopher Wolfe. He's an internet lawyer with Hogan Lovells, and he's the co-author of Viral Hate, Containing Its Spread on the Internet. And his co-author on that is Abraham Foxman, who is he's the head of the ADL.
He's the national director of the Anti-Defamation League.
And I know you're very active in the organization as well.
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about the parental role. You're saying here parents should be teaching their children. Should they be screening where they're going? Should they block access to sites? How do you do that? I mean, it's so big. How do you control it?
Well, that's a really great question. And in the early days at the ADL, when we were trying to advise parents on how to deal with this issue with respect to their kids, It seems quaint now, but we used to advise them put the family computer in the corner
in the kitchen
so you could see what your kids were doing.
Good luck with that.
Right, exactly. Well, today, you know, kids have handheld devices. They have computers in their room. They have laptops. They have iPads and on and on and on. So apps actually supervising the use of these devices is not practical. And it's also not practical to try to have a filter. A so-called hate filter.
It's almost impossible, isn't it?
Right. It's not an issue of keywords or certain words being hate speech and certain words not being hate speech. Context matters a lot. You know, one could be teaching about the Holocaust and anti-Semitism and hatred towards Jews in a scholarly context, or they could be denying the Holocaust and trying to attack people based on their religion. They'd be using the same words, but in different contexts. So,
yeah.
So filters really don't work very well. So education really is the number one tool, and starting at a very early age.
You need to sit down and have a conversation with the kids.
And not just one conversation.
Right,
but really
exactly.
Continual ongoing discussion about what they're seeing online. You know, there's a website, I wish it was down. I think it's still up, martinlutherking.org, which
you mentioned that in the book.
Right. Mm-hmm. Sounds like it would be a tribute to Dr. King, and on its homepage, it looks like it is. But if you drill down, it's actually a virulently racist site. And for the unsuspecting kid doing research for their term paper in the fourth or fifth grade, what they see is what they might believe. You know, the old
right.
South Pacific song, you have to be carefully taught to hate. Well, this is part of that hate education. And one of our concerns about hate on the internet is that it tends to recruit and mislead young people into believing that what they see is true and to joining forces with other haters, and so that they become adult haters. And we know what the repercussions of that can be.
Yes. And that is, it's the book is so powerful. When I read it, I kept thinking, my goodness, I love the internet, and yet it can do so much harm that if it's used improperly. Now, so the government is not the answer. We're talking about parents educating their children. This is a continuing dialogue that needs to go on in families.
Yes.
And since we can't screen what the kids are doing anymore. Yeah, it's funny how not too long ago we were saying, you know, put the computer in the kitchen and it doesn't work anymore, as you pointed out.
Right.
Let's talk about what needs to be done in the schools. All right. We've got the parents. Let's get to the schools, and then we're going to go to the social media.
So the other thing that can be done in schools is teaching kids, when they're taught about the First Amendment, to teach them that they also have First Amendment rights to speak up and to speak out.
Yes.
When they see hate speech, when they hear hate speech, or when they hear racist, homophobic, anti-Semitic jokes, they don't have to sit there and laugh or slough them off. They can say, look, that's disrespectful, that's hateful, that's hurtful. Don't say that. Speaking up really makes a difference. And we say in the book, essentially, when you see something, say something. That isn't just restricted to backpacks at airports.
No.
It really does apply to hate speech online. We don't have to simply slough it off as the natural effluent of the internet. So counter speech is incredibly important, standing up to people. One of the things that goes on every day is that people will retweet hate speech and say, this is disgusting, this is bad, this shouldn't happen. And it for some people, it shames them into stopping, which is exactly what it ought to do.
Mm-hmm.
And for others, it brings attention to how misguided they are. And others can...
And others may get some of the publicity that they're seeking.
Well, that's true. And that's, you know, we talk about law enforcement because the United States has the First Amendment, but the law is available in countries around the world, particularly in Europe. Which suffered the most directly from the Holocaust. There are laws that prohibit, make illegal Holocaust denial and the use of Nazi mm-hmm. imagery.
Mm-hmm.
But we found that when those laws are enforced, the people publishing this stuff tend to be made martyrs by their fellow haters. And the stuff is republished in the United States where it's not illegal. And going after these folks one at a time, when we know what the magnitude of content on the internet is a little bit like killing one cockroach in your kitchen when there are thousands behind the wall. You're just not going to have much effect.
Let's look at some of the tools that we do have. And that is, for example, complaining to the social websites. Search engines such as Google. Can you report to Google if you find that there's a website that you feel is spewing hate?
So that's a great question, and I want to get back to the Facebooks and YouTubes of the world, but let's talk about Google for a second.
Okay.
We had an example a few years ago where if you put in the search term Jew, one of the first sites that came up was a site called Jew Watch, which was a decidedly anti-Semitic site. We went to Google and we said, we don't think that that's what people are looking for, and we don't think that's what ought to appear first. And Google said, and understandably, that they have an algorithm that creates the search results, and they really can't tamper with that, because if they do it for one, they'll have to do it for lots mm-hmm. of others, not just for hate speech, for lots of other reasons. And we were a little frustrated by that. But we got together and we were creative, and Google agreed to put a sponsored link right alongside the search results that said, the first search result you see is hate speech. We don't endorse it, and we think if you want to learn more about it and have greater context, here's a link to the Anti-Defamation League. And we thought that was a creative solution.
Awesome. I think that is a creative solution. Now, first off, before we get to that, let's just take a break here to let people know they're listening to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Christopher Wolf. He's an internet lawyer with Hogan Lovells, and he is the co-author of Viral Hate. And we're just talking about what we can do, and the subtitle of the book is Containing Its Spread on the Internet. We're talking about these very things. The co-author is Abraham Foxman, who is with the American Anti-Defamation League. Sorry that Abe could not join us today.
Yeah, he's sorry as well.
Yeah. But Chris, going back to this, what we were just talking about, the spreading of hate and the way Google put the disclaimer, so to speak.
Counter speech, really.
Counter speech is, well, yes, that's a very productive, positive way to look at it. But how often does that happen?
Not often enough, but
okay.
there are other things that can be done by the hosts, and I'm happy to say that many of the companies, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Twitter, eBay, I could go on, it's a big group,
yes,
have agreed to meet with the Anti-Defamation League and other advocates, including free speech advocates, regularly to talk about this problem and to share best practices. Mm-hmm. So almost all of the services have policies against hate speech. And I have Facebook's right here that says hate speech is prohibited and defined as content that attacks people based on their actual or perceived race, ethnicity, national origin, religion, sex, gender, sexual orientation, disability, or disease. And what Facebook doesn't do is screen content before it goes up. You know,
that's almost impossible.
40,000 posts a minute, that would be impossible. They wouldn't have the staff to do that. But they do respond to complaints, and they have a very able staff and a large staff to deal with complaints about content.
So it's up to the consumer. If something comes up on a search that is just hate speech,
yes,
then you should let Google know. How do you let them know?
Google,
you know,
Facebook.
It's not easy to get in touch with these companies.
Well, more and more they're putting little icons or report abuse text right next to the posting.
I think YouTube does that, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so you absolutely can do that. But, you know, in the comment sections to YouTube, as well as to newspapers, ordinary newspapers online, if you see hate-filled comments, there's no reason why you can't type your own comment that message is, first of all, not pertinent to this discussion, and it's disparaging and degrading and harmful. Let's be more civil here.
Yes.
And you'd be surprised how people shape up. There was an incident at Facebook recently where normally Facebook requires you to use your real name. They have a real name policy, which we think actually promotes
more civil discourse. You can't hide behind it, right.
You have to stand up for what you say. But they do allow pages, and you don't have to use your real name if you sponsor a page. There was a page with a very distasteful, really despicable meme using Anne Frank's picture, and her birthday was recently.
Yes, I read that.
And they went to the person who posted it and said, look, we want you either to put your name behind this and be associated with it, or we'll take it down. And of course, the person said, oh, God, I don't want to be associated with that. Let's take it down. And 95% of the cases, I think, end up that way.
Huh.
And so that's also an effective way of not banning the speech outright, but going to the person sponsoring the speech and saying, you know, do you want to stand behind it or not? Because it has effects.
So it's really a lot of it is up to parents, the consumers, the users of the internet, and training our kids.
And getting the internet companies to, making it easy for us to report abuse and to respond. There's a really absolutely gifted law professor at the University of Maryland Law School named Danielle Citron, and she's got another book coming out after ours called Hate 3.0, but she's written a lot of law review articles on the subject about how women are intimidated by what they see online so that they don't participate online.
Oh, really?
They're not able to exercise their own First Amendment free expression rights. And we saw recently the episode involving women who went to Facebook and Facebook's advertisers and said, you've got content that promotes rapes and attacks on women and makes jokes about it, and you're not taking it down in response to our complaints. And Facebook, to its credit, said, you know, you're right. We need to do a better job. We will do a better job. And, you know, it may have been some pressure from the advertisers, but Facebook also, I think, has a culture now that takes this more seriously. Mm-hmm. So there's an example of how a group speaking up really did make a difference.
Well, and we have to make our voices heard, and that's the way that you make a difference, is the more voices that are heard, the more impact you're going to have.
And the great thing about the internet is you don't have to be part of some organized group. You can do it yourself, one by one.
Yes, you can do it online.
Absolutely.
I got to get out there and lead those women to say what they think.
Yes.
Yes, but I can understand, because first off, there's always a fear of being attacked. I don't mean necessarily physically, but I mean verbally attacked and made fun of. And then people can do that to you online.
Sure. Cyberbullying, of course, has been a huge problem.
Oh,
and this
yes.
is that's at one end of the spectrum when you're dealing with the cyber hate. The kid who doesn't want to go to school because he's been bullied online.
It's terrible.
And he doesn't know who the bullier is because they're hiding behind the mask of anonymity.
Well, let's just recap some of the things that we need to do as consumers of the internet.
The first thing is not to simply sit idly by and accept internet hate as the norm and as the natural byproduct of the internet as a great tool of communication. That we really can do things. Counter speech is an enormously powerful tool. When you see something, say something. Speak up against what you're seeing online. There are tools available online to
make
do
comments,
that.
Yes.
You can also report hate speech to the operators of the services that you're using, whether it's Facebook, YouTube, Google, Twitter,
and you say
whatever.
They're making it easier for consumers to do that now.
They are, absolutely. And the Anti-Defamation League has a cyber hate resource center. So if you go to adl.org and then click on cyber hate, you'll find a list of all the major services and a link to how you can report abuse.
I love it. That is wonderful.
So that's the first of its kind. It really does make it easy.
Yes. Give us that information again.
Sure. ADL.org is the website. Go to the Cyber Hate Response Center, and you'll see a tool that allows you to report hate speech to the major internet providers.
Oh, that is such a positive thing for consumers, and you make it easy. I mean, look, we're lazy. We're busy. You're giving people a tool that they can use, and they can find it, and they can use it easily. That's the beauty of it.
Absolutely.
Because I'll tell you, it's a little intimidating to go online, and you see something you don't like, but you think, how do I get it taken down? How do I complain? It's not always clear how you're going to be able to do that.
Going to the terms of service and reading the fine print is not all that easy. But look, we hope people will buy the book Viral Hate, Containing Its Spread on the Internet, which is available online and at bookstores, because it does have an action plan for everybody, parents, kids, consumers, and members of the internet community. And we think it's the first of its kind, and we hope it's not the last. We know Professor Citron's got her book coming out, and we hope that people will really take this issue seriously.
Well, the good thing about it, as I said at the beginning, it is very readable. Doesn't sound like it was written by a lawyer.
Well, thank you. It's a high compliment. I appreciate yes. that.
But it really is, Chris. It's an excellent book. It you know, gives you shivers sometimes to read it. But it says the things that we need to hear and we need to think about and we need to take action. So thank you.
Well, I thank you for bringing attention to it and having me on the show today.
My guest has been Christopher Wolf. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Shirley Rooker. Thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.